Last evening, Central Michigan University hosted the second reading in the Meyer Visiting Writers Series. This is a collaboration of the Departments of English and Creative Writing, and Robert Fanning, Jeffrey Bean, and their colleagues searching for poets to come and share their work, and writers to come and bring their artistic ventures to share with the students and the wider community. And the guest this past evening was Catherine Wing, who comes to us from Ohio. And before she ventures back and onto future travels, we're pleased to welcome her into studio this morning. Hello, and good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about you. Was there a writer or a book or an individual poem that inspired you? How did Catherine Wing get launched down the path towards being a writer, being a poet?
Oh my goodness, that's a large question. let's see, was there a... I think I just always liked writing. I liked playing with words, and I'm more of a playful poet, so I think that's fairly obvious once you start hearing or reading my work. So there wasn't any one particular book. I just think it was pleasure in the words themselves that brought me to it. I did all the traditional things, you know, read Shakespeare and Milton and Frost and Auden. I got some good support as an undergraduate from poet Michael Harper. And, you know, from there, one's curiosity just takes over.
Hmm. Traditional names that would be familiar to people that might not think of themselves as real, you know, devotees or fans of writing and so forth. Anybody that changed your path along the way? You say played with words, read the traditional, and started to find your own way. Was there anybody that created that sort of fork in the road that really shaped that style as you got older? The passion was there when you were young, but was there any divergent path that sent you in a different direction?
Yeah, I went to the University of Washington up in Seattle for graduate school, and poet Richard Kenny was my mentor. So he's quite an erudite poet, very interested in science. But what he did for me was sort of crack open the egg of language to not think about poetry so much, but to think about how language evolved, how we evolved with language, and also to sort of push on the ideas of where emotion comes from in language. Like everybody has the sense of what a poem is as it's sort of an emotional, you know, like as an emotional carrier, right? You read the poem and the poem translates its emotion, emotional experience, emotional material to you, and then you have that experience. So it was Richard Kenny who really sort of woke me up to the ideas of thinking about language and how language works. How when we say a thing, that thing, I mean, you know, language is a symbolic thing, right? You know, when you're just looking at a word, it's just a word, you know. But then when you start to think about it, like why is the word stone any different from the word rock? But it is, right? I mean, they mean more or less the same thing, but a stone is different from the word rock. Those things are different. They create different kinds of resonances in your brain. So that was a big change for me.
Who resonates when you teach and work with your own students? Is it Tennyson or Frost or Shakespeare or Kenny? Which voices are perhaps the loudest in your ear most of the time that you channel with the growing experience you have as your own voice, your own artist, to pass along to those you hope to inspire?
Well, students want to hear things that are contemporary. So you have to, you know, like you have to lure them with contemporary voices, and then maybe you can slip in some of the older voices. If you start with the dead poets, then students are often immediately turned off. So
has that always been the case? I wonder if it's a shift with young people. And now I'm going to really start sounding old, but I'll take that chance. Students today versus students 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever the case may be, that there is now, maybe it's phones, maybe it's everything online, maybe it's everything at the fingertips, but there's this immediacy, there's this, you know, what's new, what's now, we've got to move on to the next thing, that seems like it would have shifted that paradigm.
I don't think it's as new as 5 years or 10 years. I mean, I can actually remember some moments in the classroom where I myself felt it. But maybe in the last 50 years or the last 70 years, poetry is a slow art, right? It's meant to be, you know, you're meant to read it on the page or speak it out loud, and it's meant to do everything that our culture fights against, right? It's not fast. It's not it's not efficient. It's meant to make you stop and think. You know, like it's meant to arrest you. You know, like, oh my goodness, here's this. You know, like whatever it is, it's meant to stop you in the middle of the street so that, you know, like you look up and, a la Mary Oliver, see the snow geese or the wild geese or whatever geese are in the air that day. And then you have a moment in which you sort of contemplate your existence on the earth. You know, like that Twitter is not about that.
Thank goodness. Catherine Wing has been the guest this week of the Meyer Visiting Writers Series at Central Michigan University. Those events will resume in the spring semester as well. And she did her reading last night on campus. Her most recent collection of poems is Gin and Bleach. And this was published by Saraband in 2012. You as writer, we hear about routines, set times, particular places, idiosyncrasies and habits that writers choose to write. Do you have then for you as your own individual artist a place or a time? It's always this regular thing that sets you up to write. Is there a routine there?
Right. Not of late. I have an administrative job, so I find my headspace to be really rather occupied with dull accounting issues and such things, but I sort of view a day as like a lawn that spreads out in front of you, and I'm not an efficient person. I need like a good half of the lawn, you know, like I need four hours that don't have any things crowded in on it, like so no lawn furniture, no. So in that way, I need a large space or chunk of time to be able to, even if it is do nothing, to do that. And I'm not a day, you know, like I don't write exclusively in the morning or exclusively in the evening. I have a young child, and so actually I find myself really unable to do basically anything after he goes to bed. But over the course of my life, I have had various sort of systems that you put in place. One which was effective was sort of like I would have my notebook, and I do write by hand, so I'm, I guess, old fashioned in that regard, but I'd put an asterisk like three pages back in the notebook, and I would not get up from the table until I had written to that asterisk. And that was an effective method while it lasted. So maybe someday soon I'll get back to that method. But at the moment, what I write is a lot of email, sadly.
The poem of Excel, I guess
that's right.
Another one of the art forms. Interesting that you say that. We're speaking with Catherine Wing here on Mosaic on this Friday here on WCMU. So when do you know that the poem is done? Has a short piece become longer one, or vice versa? Is it always writing to the asterisk? Is it sometimes saying, I don't need to go to the asterisk, this is okay as it is?
Well, if you write the poem and then it, like you're done with that poem at the moment, then you have to write another one. You have to write some more. But to your question more specifically, I've heard this quote out of the mouth of or attributed to various different people, but normally Paul Valery, a poem is never finished, only abandoned, right? And I think that's sort of true, that they're never done, even much later. Like I was reading a poem last night and I thought, I don't know about that line, and that was a poem that I wrote 10, 15 years ago. So they things can always get better. But I don't know, they come in different types, right? Sometimes a poem never seems right. And those are the poems you just put away in the drawer and get them out every couple of months or couple of years and look at it and be like, well, I like some of this, but it never gels. And others come much faster, fully born, fully formed, born, fully formed, something like that. Yeah.
Or formed before they've been fully born. We're not sure.
Right.
I would never box anybody in and label something as a particular style. And since I am not one, I talk to the people that do what they do. So I'm not going to put labels on anyone. But do you find that in any of your writing, there is a certain style that, and I will plead ignorance to not knowing all of the forms and influences in poetry at this point, but certain types of poems, a style or a form that might be common to the art form, do you write that way for a while or feel comfortable writing that way for a while and then move into another traditional set way? And anything like that that influences you?
Yeah, we had a question from a student last night that's indicative of this, which is, and this will sound sort of strange, right? What's traditional now in contemporary poetry is mostly free verse, right? So poetry as a whole has sort of moved away from from formal foundations, rhyme and meter. But so, fighting against the tradition, the current tradition, to go back to the old tradition, I care about form. And so I care quite a lot about rhyme and meter, and I care about making noise. I like to play with words, and I like the sound of words when you put them all together. And so in that way, I care about some old things that I feel that a lot of contemporary poets or just sort of the general ethos is more at free verse and more about tone, right? Sort of more. Whitman's idea was that poetry is just like speech of the common man. So we're still, and I agree. I like that too. But I also care about rhyme and meter. So I don't know. I try to dance with all partners. I won't say no to anyone, if that makes sense.
Well, if we asked you to choose a partner or two, or a rhyme and meter, or a free verse, or something, Catherine Wing, would you please read for us?
Sure, for sure. So I'll start with a poem that's good for all kinds of writers. If you want to get started on your own work, it's a poem called The Pitch. So, you know, just these are possibilities for you in your own writing. Yes, the pitch. It's the story of a math genius posing as an imbecile. Or the one where Porky is saved from the slaughterhouse by a woman who wears no underpants. It's the story of a rapacious weed that takes over the earth, of one-breasted Wanda falling in love with Jungle Jack. Ed Anger writes the story up. It's the story of a rash, and the story of a rash of deaths caused by a sea hag. It's the story of a woman who could not open her mouth, and a woman who could not close her mouth. Maybe they meet. Maybe they don't. Maybe they are the perfect couple. It is the story of a man possessed by his tattoo. It's an exclusive. It's a curse or a commandment. It's a commandment on cursing, which says, for God's sake, thou shalt not laze about on your chaise longue. It's a true story. It is the story of a man who talked his way out of credit card debt. It is the story of the sunrise on July 10, 2003. It is the story of a traveling shadow. It is an old man walking down the road story. It has a sculpted base to rest upon, which can be yours if you act now. Should I continue?
Please do. Catherine Wing, the guest this week of the Meyer Visiting Writing Series at Central Michigan University. If you were not able to attend last night's event, happy to have her with us in studio here this morning on Mosaic.
All right. So since we're talking about lots of play with words, Robert Fanning mentioned this poem last night in his introduction, so I'll read it. Now, this will bring up all the rhyme and the meter stuff. But it's called Trash Bird, and a trash bird is a bird, crows, sparrows, starlings that are able essentially to live off humans. They don't need any additional berries or nuts or grubs or worms. They just live off of us and our trash. So I think it was a crow that inspired this one in particular. Trash bird. Bit of tinsel, twig of hazel, pine cone and a poker chip. Pleasure center, rot in shimmer, shine and glister, ketchup drip. Coffee cup and copper wire, hazard tape and plastic bags, egg McMuffin, broken condom, kudzu vine and dirty rags, cigarette butt, butter finger, wrapper and some metal scrap, concrete fill and weather stripping, dead mouse in a cheap mouse trap, acid rain to acid river, tap water that leaves a rash, sewer sludge, smear of vomit, heart of garbage, head of trash.
Conversation with a crow.
and all the other, you know, all the other trash.
All the other things
around
that were there. Would you say it's people, places, events, animals, beliefs? What do you think sparks? You've mentioned several times and centered around the theme of playing with words. But is there any subject matter that you think inspires most of your work?
I like science a lot. I'm not a scientist, but I think to think about the evolution of language, that's interesting. I have a series of poems that focus on a Neanderthal sort of contemplating his universe. I have a poem about a blue whale. I think there are things in science that often inspire me to write.
If a lot of life is centered on the four-year-old and the administrative tasks at your university, Kent State, where you're dealing with lots of those types of things, when you feel the pull or the time and the space to get back a little bit more full-time to writing, when do you think the next, if a poem is never complete but only abandoned. When does the next collection come into play that would follow up Gin and Bleach and Enter Invisible?
That's a good question. I have a quorum. I think I have enough poems that sit in a file together to make another book, but I'm hoping that maybe they'll get better. Maybe they'll do some talking to each other and that they'll get better before. But so hopefully, you know, I'm sure my publisher and my university would like this to be sooner rather than later.
The system pulling on the artist to comply and deliver.
Right.
That's a common theme as well.
Right.
Whether it's one that ends up in one of those other collections or where it comes from and wherever it fell into the timeline, would you leave us with another before we let you hit the road back to Ohio?
Certainly. This is a good seasonal poem. It's not terribly uplifting, I'm afraid, but we've just had daylight savings, and it is in some way about this time of year. It's called The Darker Sooner. Then came the darker sooner, came the later lower. We were no longer a sweeter here, happily ever after. We were after ever. We were farther and further. More was the word we used for harder. Lost was our standard bearer. Our gods were fallen faster and fallen larger. The day was duller, duller was disaster. Our charge was error. Instead of leader, we had louder. Instead of lover, never. And over this river broke the winter's black weather. So, a happy little ditty to send you all off into the morning.
As long as there's sunshine, the snow doesn't bother me, the cold doesn't bother me. The gray days are the ones that perhaps can inspire some of the darker words, but as long as there's a ray of sunshine, we're okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Catherine Wing, thank you so much.
Thank you for having
me. Very good to have you here. And knowing that you are friends with Robert Fanning and with Jeffrey Bean, I hope that it won't be the last time you'll be venturing from one land of the Mid-American Conference to the other, and hopefully taking some nice memories of your time here back to share with all of them and channel into the administrative things, and maybe that chance to write again very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
A pleasure having you here.